Hello and welcome to The Bottom Line. This podcast examines the business and finance issues faced by closely held and private businesses. We hope to provide you with news you can use in what we like to think of as a jargon-free zone. In this, the debut issue of The Bottom Line, we thought it made sense to start with the essence of a business, how it chooses to see itself in relation to how others view it. I'm your host, Dave Plasko, and with us today is Tim Schuster, a manager in Eisner Amper's Private Business Services Group. Tim, welcome to this maiden voyage of The Bottom Line.
Dave, I'm glad to be here. This is going to be fantastic. Excellent. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. So, Tim, tell me, when we were discussing a name for this podcast, we considered the business types, small, family, privately held, closely held. Tell our listeners what the differences are, if any.
Sure, it'd be my pleasure. So there's a lot of times where you're going through and you're hearing different names for businesses, and you're like, man, I wonder where I potentially could be classified as. Just to kind of give everyone here a high-level view of what kind of four very common types of businesses there are. The first one is a small business, and by definition, you could probably figure out what that is. Just by from an IRS perspective, it's anything less than $10 million in assets.
Okay.
A family business is one where it's owned by one or two more family members. So, you know, you can figure it out. If you have two brothers that are working together on a business, it's pretty much a family business. You know, mother, son, you know, any sort of combination of in-laws working together,
yep.
That all follows a family structure.
Got it.
Privately held, that's any business owned either by a non-governmental organization or by a small number of shareholders. The important thing to note there is that stock is not traded to the general public. And a closely held business is limited number of shareholders. Stock can be traded on occasion, but not on a regular basis. So if you want to keep in mind what the differences are between privately held and closely held, just think privately held is not traded on the stock market.
Right. Okay. Now, are there any other kinds of formalized standards, number of employees, revenue, et cetera, of what constitutes a small, medium, or large company? And who sets these standards?
Everyone's friend, the Internal Revenue Service, are the ones who set the standard. You might laugh when I give these statistics, but generally what comprises a small business is any business under $10 million in assets. And I don't know if any of you have been around recently, but $10 million in assets is not a small figure. Medium to large companies will fall into anything over $10 million in assets. So, you know, the IRS sets the standards. Personally, I think that they need to update those figures, but the last time I think they were updated was somewhere in the 60s.
Okay. Now, why is understanding where you fall on that scale important?
See, it's important to figure out where you're structuring your business. There are many different formats, which I believe we're going to discuss a little later on this podcast. But if you're a larger company, you know, they have a much more sophisticated way to do business. You know, let's use an example of a large conglomerate. So let's use Johnson & Johnson.
Okay.
You know, they have many different forms of structures where you'll have a staff, a senior, a manager, a controller, a CFO working together to get things through. So they have a very much a rigid structure. How they do their operations and also how they report their numbers. Most businesses, say the mom and pop style of business, you're going to see them not have as much of a very strict structure. So depending upon where you are, if you're looking to grow your business, you want to think ahead potentially as to what your structures are.
Okay. Now we hear a lot about different types of business formats. It's a whole alphabet soup, LLCs, S-corps, C-corps, on and on and on. You know, tell us a little bit about these, what they are, what are the pros and cons of each, again, in that jargon-free zone that we're in.
Well, let me tell you, it'd be my pleasure. So I think the best way to start this is to kind of go over exactly, you hear different things like sole proprietorships and partnerships, and then after discussing what the differences are between them, discussing the difference between a limited liability company and a limited partnership. So first, the sole proprietorship is the easiest business to start. Based upon the definition by itself there, sole means one. So it's you by yourself. You're an unincorporated business, and all of your personal taxes flow through on your Schedule C, which is a 1040. So anyone who has a sole proprietorship, unincorporated, will file a Schedule C. A partnership, by definition, also means you need to have at least two people involved. So that's a general, very basic operations. You know, income, deductions, gains and losses are reported on what's called a 1065, which is a partnership return. And all of that information will flow through to an individual. A corporation, which is what most of you are familiar with, is any corporation that is an independent legal entity where shareholders pay for different forms of stock and ownership in the company. The actual shareholders are not legally liable for any of the consequenting incurrences in the business activities. That's important to note as we discuss that a little bit later.
Okay.
But a lot of people are familiar with that structure because, hey, if you go to the stock exchange and you buy stocks, guess what? You're buying a corporation. So the next steps, I kind of want to talk about what are S-Corps, LLCs, LLPs, and everyone's like, wow, what is that? Let's actually talk about partnership structures or S-Corporation structures. You know, everyone knows that you need at least two people there. An S-Corporation is unique in a sense that it'll actually follow partnership rules where, you know, all of the income and the losses will pass through individually to a shareholder. The advantage to an S-Corp is, from a liability perspective, it's treated the same as a C-Corp, which is a corporation, mm-hmm. and a partnership. If you merge the two together, that's an S-Corporation.
Okay.
A limited liability company is very similar to an S-Corporation. It's all about the structure. So if you're looking for this, you need to actually talk to an attorney just to make sure you get the structure right. But it's just a limited liability company. It's the advantage of a partnership and an S-Corp together, and that's the limited liability portion of it.
Okay.
C-corporations are what we discussed before, all those major companies that are on stock exchanges. You will see, though, some instances of smaller businesses following in that structure, but a lot of people will do C-Corps just because they have that limited liability. You know, everyone always looks for that limited liability.
Sure.
You want to separate the business from your personal assets. So an LLC, C-Corp, and an LLP, which is the last one I want to discuss, they all have that ability where they're going to separate out your legal liability compared to what the business is.
So it helps to mitigate risk.
Precisely, yes. Okay. The goal really there is to mitigate risk.
Okay.
And an LLP is a partnership structure. So an LLP is the limited liability partnership structure, and it has all those advantages to mitigate risks.
Okay. Now, in talking about these different frameworks, whether it's a company size or the formats, business structure, how does that impact what you as a business and financial advisor do?
So depending upon your size is how complex you need to have your advisors. So let's say hypothetically you're a mid-sized company, which a mid-sized company is somewhere, you know, based on definitions before, anything over $10 million in assets, you might need a little bit more structure. And you might need your accountant, your banker, your lawyer to be all on the same page. The key there is, and really who actually quarterbacks a lot of this, are the accountants. A lot of times an attorney will have to contact your accountant to figure out how they need to structure something. The banker will need to contact the accountant as well. But the key takeaway there is no matter how complex your organization is, the accountant needs to be the number one person you need to discuss any sort of strategy with so everyone's on the same page.
Okay. Now, as this is the inaugural podcast of The Bottom Line, what kind of topics can our listeners expect in the future?
So the goal is really to have, as discussed before, a jargon-free podcast on general business information that can touch upon many different topics. We'll discuss day-to-day issues greatly impacting privately held companies such as healthcare, technology, regulations, succession planning, and a host of other news that you can use.
That's the key, news mm-hmm. you can use.
News you can use.
Okay. Now, on the lighter side, it's come to my attention that you're a member of the New Jersey Historical Society. How about giving us a little factoid?
Oh, it'd be my pleasure. So I actually have a two factoid one for you.
Okay.
Why did we get our name, the Garden State? And also, did you know we also had a New Jersey Day?
That I did not know.
Yeah, I know, right? Most people don't. So Abraham Browning of Camden gave New Jersey the nickname the Garden State. Browning called New Jersey the Garden State while speaking at a Philadelphia Centennial Exhibition on New Jersey Day, which happens to be August 24th, 1876. We just passed that. Browning said, "Our Garden State is an immersed barrel filled with good things to eat and open at both ends, with Pennsylvanians grabbing from one end and New Yorkers from the other." And look at that. Back in 1876, they knew what was going to happen still to this day.
Interesting. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's pretty cool. Well, Tim, thanks for being here and sharing your expertise.
It's my pleasure, Dave.
And thank you for listening to The Bottom Line as part of the Eisner Amper podcast series. Visit EisnerAmper.com for more information on this and a host of other topics. And join us for our next Eisner Amper podcast when we get down to business.